BBC.
BBC.
Now in the BBC World Service, witness. During World War II, conscientious objectors were asked to volunteer for medical research as part of the war effort. In one project in the USA, young men were starved for 6 months to find out how best the victims of mass starvation could be treated in war-torn Europe. Janet Ball has been speaking to one of the volunteers, 95-year-old Marshall Sutton.
The Naval Training Station for recruits at San Diego.
It's 1944 and American troops have been fighting in the Second World War for over 2 years, encouraged to enlist by recruitment films and by strong social pressure.
Thousands of recruits building strong bodies. During the first few weeks, young men often gain from 8 to 10 pounds. Exercise and healthy appetites contribute to each man's fitness for the job ahead.
But there were young men who refused to sign up to fight. These conscientious objectors, or COs, were put in camps and made to do menial work. One, 26-year-old Marshall Sutton, was working in a mental institution when he saw a brochure calling for volunteers for a medical experiment. Under a picture of a group of children, it asked, "Will you starve that they be better fed?" Along with hundreds of other COs, he applied to take part.
I was a conscientious objector and refused to kill. But I wanted to experience a little risk, and that's why I volunteered. I was happy to do that. And so that commitment on the part of all of us was quite deep. We understood the nature of the experiment, and I think that gave us the power to go through it.
The experiment was conducted by Dr. Ansel Keys and his colleagues at the University of Minnesota, starting in November 1944. The U.S. military knew there'd be mass starvation across Europe after the war ended. So Dr. Keyes and his team planned to starve a group of 36 healthy young men for 6 months and then split them into four groups to see what technique worked best in feeding them back to health. For the first 3 months of the experiment, Marshall and his fellow volunteers looked the same as any other student and participated in normal university life. But then their rations were cut dramatically.
After you've not had food for a while, your state of being just gets numb. That's the way I can describe it. I didn't have any pain. I was just very weak, very weak. I mean, I said, when you go in a building, I knew where the elevators were, and one's sexual life and desires disappeared, more or less. It was not, I think, as difficult as some people might think, and we, of course, knew it was an end point and we were going to be fed, you know. In my mind, that made a great deal of difference. I looked upon what I was doing as really a spiritual discipline, and I took it in stride, you know. Also realized that we were having the best medical care in the world. There were doctors all around us. I was notified that I had an irregular heartbeat. And they asked me if I want to step off the experiment, and I said no. So I still have the irregular heartbeat, and I'm 95.
But not all the volunteers coped so well. While they were being starved, the men were expected to walk or run 36 kilometres every week, expending over 1,000 calories more than they had consumed each day. Their walks took them past bakeries and other temptations, and it was all too much for some participants. Some pulled out of the experiments, others experienced anemia and swollen ankles. Food quickly became an obsession.
We went into meals together, the 35 of us went and sat at a big table, and we only had about 1,800 calories there. It was different for each person. I ate what I had in about 3 minutes and got out of there. I didn't want to stay. There were some in the experiment that lingered over that food for 20 minutes. Some fellows were reading cookbooks all the time. I couldn't possibly do that. My best girlfriend came out to see me, and I wanted to take her to a restaurant so I would enjoy just seeing her eat. And I took her to the best restaurant in Minneapolis, and the waiter came up with the food, and when she saw it, she just couldn't do it. And so I was a little disturbed with her. I paid for a big meal, and she couldn't eat it. But that was sort of an example.
One of the legacies of the project, though, was a greater understanding of the psychological effects of starvation, and it's still cited by academics studying malnutrition and eating disorders. The participants struggled to concentrate, suffered depression and anxiety, were more irritable, and in one instance, one man even cut off a finger while chopping wood and couldn't explain how or why.
We were under tension, and the result of that was when something good happened, we would explode with joy, and when we were pessimistic, we were very depressed and sometimes very short with our friends. I had very close friends there, and often I would speak sharply to him about something, and then I would find myself going to him almost every night and say, "John G., I brought you up short today. I'm so sorry."
But even as the experiment continued, one, then another Nazi concentration camp was liberated, and the full horror of starvation and abuse became apparent. The BBC's correspondent Edward Ward described entering the Buchenwald concentration camp in April 1945.
In Buchenwald today, 7 days after the liberation of the camp, men are still starving to death. More than 20,000 poor, famished prisoners are still watching their numbers steadily dwindling. Most of them are so emaciated that they looked like terrible scarecrows. A hollow-eyed, emaciated German Jew hobbled across to me. He opened the door of a large cupboard just inside the door. Inside, about 20 corpses piled high in a tangled heap looked at me with glassy eyes. "Last night's crop," the man said, almost casually. "It will be the same tomorrow and the next day and the next day." That is the ghastly tragedy of Buchenwald. The wretched inmates have been freed from their Nazi tormentors, but they have not yet been freed from the horror of slow starvation.
But while results from the project may have come too late for many of World War II's victims, the participants believe their sacrifice was still worthwhile. In 1946, the researchers published a guidebook for humanitarian workers entitled Men and Hunger. But for the volunteers, it took a long time, far beyond the end of the experiment, for them to recover.
I remember taking a bus when I left Minneapolis. I had not completely recovered. I took the bus for Chicago, and every time the bus stopped, I had a couple of milkshakes. The world was a wonderful place, and I went home, and, the family really were wonderful to me. But I had no sense of recovery. I did not have the strength, you understand? And at the school where I was teaching, I was active in athletics. I played baseball, basketball, and football, and I was assistant to this coach at the school, and I finally told him that I could do the baseball and the football, but I couldn't just operate on the basketball court. I wasn't normal, you know. I've talked to Red Cross and all the groups who work in these areas, and they found out that the best you can do when people are starving is to give them some food, of course.
But while the effects were long-lasting, most of the volunteers involved in the project went on to lead healthy and successful lives. Marshall Sutton said it certainly changed his life, leading him to work in Gaza in 1949, feeding hungry refugees, and then on Quaker projects in the US. At the age of 95, he now lives in a Quaker community in Baltimore.
Janet Ball. If you'd like to subscribe to a free daily download of the programme, just go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts and search for Witness.
On the next Fresh Air, on Martin Luther King Day, the story of the battle to pass the Civil Rights Act. We talk with Todd Purdom, author of a forthcoming book about that battle called An Idea Whose Time Has Come. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Civil Rights Act. Also, jazz critic Kevin Whitehead reviews a new album by pianist Lafayette Gilchrist. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9 HD3 Urbana. From PR.